What is going on? This is the Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you here Wednesday night, right after the Los Angeles Clippers somehow, some way, knock off the Houston Rockets after falling behind by double digits. And of course, this comes just a couple of days after the Clippers led by double digits against the Giannis-less Milwaukee Bucks and lost. We've got a lot to cover. Brandon Marcus, your host at BD Marcus, joined by my co-host Matt Matawarren, back on the Ethos Clippers podcast. Matt, how are you, my friend?
Oh, it's Ethos Clipper Nation. Brandon Marcus, how the heck are you? It's raining cats and dogs here in LA. I called Six Flags Magic Mountain, and they assured me that the roller coasters there are closed due to the rain. But guess what? The roller coaster ride with this Clippers team, still going strong.
Still going strong indeed, and it's crazy because you look, and in March, the Clippers have won 3 of 4 games. So you think, we should be pretty confident about this team, you know? They win 3 of 4 games, they knock off Minnesota in Minnesota. We thought, okay, that was a good win when we recorded that podcast on Sunday. Then they go and they lose to Milwaukee in a game they should have never lost. They led by 15. Horrible free throw shooting, awful defense, coupled with some great shot making by Bobby Portis, Damian Lillard, and company. We didn't see Zoo show up late in the game as Ty Lue decided to stay small, and that probably didn't work very well against Lopez and Portis. Then, tonight, the Clippers are down big again, this time to Houston, and they come back. No Zoo again, this time probably due to injury. We'll find out more shortly as we're recording this podcast right after the game. And we think, all right, well, no Zoo. Clippers are probably screwed. Nope, second half of a back-to-back for Houston. And the Clippers decide to come back and win that ball game as Kawhi, Harden all step up. PG, who was awful in the first half, much better in the second half. I got to tell you, man, if you had told me if the Clippers were going to take 1 of 2 in these last two games after you play against Milwaukee and Houston, I would have said, yeah, that makes sense. But to lose to Milwaukee the way they did, and then to beat Houston the way they did, really just not enjoyable. So I'm going to start this podcast by asking you a question, and I'm curious to get your take. Are you enjoying this Clippers team?
The answer flat out is no. It is a slog. It is really reminiscent of years past where it is stand around, ISO, not fun. It's not that stretch after the struggles when Harden first joined the team. It is really tough to watch. I mean, I don't know what happened, if it's because they're an older team. It's like an AARP situation where they have to sort of take it slow. But even Doris Burke was mentioning it today. They came out. There's no fire. And we texted about this, you and I, during the Milwaukee game. There's no killer instinct. It hasn't been fun. And it sounds like you completely agree with me, but let's hear what you say.
Yeah. And I agree with you. And this is, here's the thing. We went into the season with a lot of people not talking about the Clippers, and we loved that. We made a point to talk about how great that is, that the expectations for the Clippers were kind of out the window because people were like, hey, well, you know, they're keep getting hurt. We'll believe it when we see it. And that was great. Then all of a sudden, the Clippers got really good, and the media attention was all over the Clippers. And all of a sudden, since then, since Kawhi was being listed as an MVP candidate, since the Clippers were being thrown in as an NBA title contender, they've really seemed to fall flat on their face, and they have not been fun to watch. Granted, winning makes games a lot more fun to watch, and the Clippers have not been winning as much as they were previously. But you and I have talked about this. Ever since that Grammy road trip, the Clippers have been really bad. They come back from that Grammy road trip, they lose to New Orleans, barely beat Detroit, they lose to Minnesota, barely beat Golden State before the break, lose to OKC, barely beat Memphis, lose to Sacramento, lose to the Lakers. They beat a terrible Washington team. They barely beat Minnesota, lose to Milwaukee without Giannis, and then they barely win today. Like, anything that I just said, were there any convincing wins in there? No, not at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, the most they've won by since they came back from that Grammy trip was that 25-point win against Washington. Apart from that, they haven't won by more than 6. So this team, like you just said, doesn't have that killer instinct. They're making things a lot harder on themselves than it really needs to be. And we're seeing that this team certainly has flaws. And I was walking back from the gym today, and I wondered aloud to myself, were the Clippers better off losing some of those games during the Grammy trip so that they would have made a trade? And I thought to myself, yes, probably it hurt them that they won all those games because it clearly seems like they've got some weaknesses that need to be filled. But then I thought to myself, well, PJ Washington certainly was not the answer because he is a very inefficient shooter. Does not shoot well. He'll have games where he'll be 3 for 15, and that certainly wouldn't work in this team. So I think it's just we're stuck with the way this team is, and we just have to hope that in a 7-game series, the Clippers have Kawhi Leonard, they have Ty Lue, and that hopefully will be enough. And you have PG and Harden and all those other guys, and you hope the Clippers can win a 7-game series, and we kind of just need to take the punches right now. And then when we get to the playoffs, it becomes a whole different animal. That's kind of where I'm at right now with this team.
And I agree with you. I don't necessarily think that. So I agree and I disagree. Like, I'm glad that they won those games on the road trip, on the Grammy road trip. But I keep thinking, like, did they peak too early?
Yeah.
Meaning that we were so happy with being a little bit under the radar. I mean, think about how happy the New Orleans Pelicans fans must be right now. They're sitting in fifth. They're just winning game after game. They're blowing out teams, and they don't get talked about at all. But they have Zion, and they have Ingram, and all this kind of. So the Clippers then became this the national spotlight on it, and justly so, because they were kind of dominating the league for that month and a half, 2 months. But then what does that do to the psyche of a team? Does it, A, make you think, okay, so we can do this. Can we take our foot off the gas a little bit? I'm not saying they think this. I'm just posing this as a hypothetical. But are they saying maybe, you know, we know the ceiling. We know what heights we can reach. So should we, as three older superstars in Harden, Kawhi, and George, should we push ourselves this hard? So maybe reaching those heights early and not necessarily winning those games on the road trip, but reaching those heights early hurt the team. And then you really have to look at the Zubac situation because he was having a career year. And, you know, he barely played today because he obviously something's wrong and something's been wrong. And him just sort of not being the Zubac of the early or when him and Harden were just clicking like this pick and roll masterpiece. That's going to play a role in it too, but I just wonder about this team. Peaking too early is stupid because you should just play as hard as you can and as well as you can always, but does it do something to your psyche? Does the All-Star break have something in your mind where it's like, okay, we know the ceilings we can reach? I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. And by the way, the update on Zoo is that apparently he had headaches before the game. He was talking to Ty Lue before the second half. And Zoo said he couldn't breathe. And so just as a staff, they decided they couldn't chance it, which makes a lot of sense. And it's crazy that they were better in the second half without Zoo. And we'll talk about Plumlee and Tice in a little bit. But yeah, it's weird. I'm glad you brought up the Pelicans because they've won 3 of their last 4 games as well. They beat New York by 23 points. They beat Indiana by 27 points. They beat Toronto by 41 points. So that's the difference, is that New Orleans is just dominating in some of these games, whereas the Clippers just don't have that domination factor, except against a very awful Washington Wizards team. And you wonder, will they be able to turn the corner? And will they be able to start dominating in some games? I mean, they play Chicago on Saturday, and Chicago doesn't have LaVine, but they still got Vooch, they still got DeRozan, they still got Kobe White, and guys like Caruso that can cause havoc on the defensive end. So I don't know, like, if that's going to happen anytime soon where they're going to dominate in a game, because they play Chicago Saturday, Milwaukee Sunday, and then Minnesota again on Tuesday, and then Chicago again, and then New Orleans. Like, this is not an easy stretch by any means. Granted, the Clippers are going to be favorites in every single game, I think, in this March calendar, except for at New Orleans on the 15th. If I had to guess, That will be the only game, maybe at Philadelphia on March 27th. That'll probably be another game where they're an underdog. So that means two games the rest of the month where Vegas probably is going to expect them to win. And I got to tell you, they're probably not going to win every game besides for two. They're probably going to lose other games in there. But granted, that tells you where this team is and that they should be winning games. Now, will they? Will they dominate like they can? I don't know. But today was not a good sign at all. And certainly Monday was a really bad sign when they should have put their foot on the throat of Milwaukee and they didn't.
Did today make you think at all? And I agree with you because these games coming up, like you said, Bulls, Bucks, T-Wolves, Bulls again, Pelicans, Hawks, Blazers. I mean, like, yeah, that should be a pretty favorable win-loss for the Clips. Did today make you think at all about Denver, about Jokic? Because we obviously watched Şengün just dominate once again, and he's stepping up in a big, bad way. I'm pretty sure I saw him at the Ralphs on Doheny and Beverly. I think I mentioned that before a couple of years ago. I didn't say hi. He's about 3 inches shorter than he is now. I think he grew since I saw him there. But they mentioned on the broadcast, the offense runs through Şengün. The offense runs through Jokic. The offense runs through fill in the blank. The Clippers seem to have a problem with that, especially if it starts down low. So just reminded me a little bit of them playing Denver. And I don't think making the Şengün, I'm not the first person to make that comparison, but it reminded me a little bit of that. They were having a lot of trouble handling the passing from the interior or even the big initiating from up top, and just something to think about.
Yeah, it's a good point. And it's something that I wrote down in my notes is that Mason Plumlee, I thought, played really poorly defensively against Şengün. I just didn't think that he did a good job staying in front of him. I didn't think he did a good enough job rebounding. I tweeted, of course, that they probably should have pulled Plumlee when they did the hack of Plumlee. And, of course, right after that, he got a big block. So credit to Plum for getting that. But, yeah, I mean, I think the defense certainly does drop off from Zoo to Plumlee. And you make a good point. And I think that Zoo does a decent job on Jokic. So I think they've got a chance. I mean, remember, Jokic had one awful, awful, awful game against Zoo. Zoo's one of the best defenders in the league at the center position. So when it comes to running the ball, the offense through the center, that may actually help the Clippers because Zoo is so good defensively. But he's not there yet. I mean, he certainly is not there. Between the calf injury that he had and then coming back and being sick and then now dealing with whatever he's dealing with, he's not all the way there. So I think we need to wait before we kind of judge that center position, because luckily we do have another month and a half before the playoffs. So Zoo has some time to get right. And the Clippers are not a contender without Zoo being right. I mean, we can talk all we want about Harden, PG, and Kawhi, but without Big Zoo being the guy he is in the middle, especially against guys in the West like Jokic and Towns and Gobert and Holmgren, like, you need Zoo. And so without him, this team has no shot. So I think we need to wait a little bit on that one, Matt.
You're right, but just a point counterpoint. Everybody listening, take a shot because I'm about to talk about a seven game series. But in a 7-game series, Zoo is so great, but he's not dynamic enough to where other coaches can't game plan against him, especially defensively. So I think where he can hold his own in a game against a Jokic and against a Şengün and, you know, against Wembanyama or whoever the case may be, in a 7-game series, I think another good coach can scheme against that to put him in situations that are unfavorable. So while I know Zoo is certainly incredibly important, like we always talk about, I don't think he's the quote-unquote stopper, because you can scheme against him, and Lord knows the Clippers are prone to switching. So if that becomes the case, and you can get him in foul trouble. So I love Zoo, but it still worries me, even with him on the court.
That's fair. And by the way, Plumlee was a plus 14 today, and 8 points, 11 rebounds with 3 block shots. So there are people out there being like, Brandon, you're an idiot. And I get it. I mean, I just thought that there were a lot of moments where he wasn't good enough. But getting 3 blocks and getting some rebounds that he did, I mean, stats-wise, it looked like he had a decent game. Plus 14, outstanding. It was the best plus-minus. I just think that the drop-off from Zoo to Plumlee and Tice is really large. And I think the Clippers certainly got away with it tonight because their offense was so damn good in the second half. I mean, they ended up shooting 55%, and I'm pretty sure they were shooting like low 40s at the end of the first half. I mean, so making as many shots as they did in the second half certainly does help. I mean, damn, they scored 42 points in the fourth and 36 in the third. They put up 78 points in the second half. And the over-under in this game, by the way, the two teams combined for 238, the over-under was 222. So the Clippers' offense certainly came to play, and it really was only in one half that they came to play, considering that they had 44 points at the half, man. So their offense, I think, really saved them from anything that Plumlee did. But he did enough, but I'm a little concerned that the second unit could be problematic. And in a way, you kind of do miss Westbrook in those situations, because when you go small ball, Westbrook does tend to be one of those dudes there. Granted, even though he sometimes is poor in those situations. So I don't know. I guess that's a long way of saying I'm not entirely sure how to judge this team, especially at the center position, quite yet, with Zoo not healthy and Plum and Tice kind of being up and down.
100%. I mean, what do you make of the hack of Plumlee? Do you think that's a strategy teams will employ moving forward? I mean, I thought that was a bit bizarre, actually. Was Houston up at the time?
Yeah, so the Clippers were making their run. I think that Houston was up by, let me check, because I want to be right about this one. I'm looking at the play-by-play right now. So Plumlee went to the line with the score 109-108 right after Şengün made one of two from the free throw line. Plumlee missed both, and then that's when Plum came down, and he got that block against Şengün. And then PG hit that three right after that block. So that was a massive turn because he missed both free throws, but he ended up getting a huge block on defensive end. The Clippers took a lead that they wouldn't give up from there. So it was big on that end. But yeah, it's a weird strategy. I don't think teams will go for it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense because Plumlee's not that bad of a free throw shooter. I mean, he's at 69% this year with the Clippers, and he was at 77% last year with the Clippers. So he's not a bad free throw shooter. In this situation, though, I probably would have pulled him just because the way that Kawhi and PG and Harden were operating, I want to see my offense actually go to work. And Houston got away with one, man. They were blatantly trying to foul Plumlee under 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And that is an intentional take foul. The Clippers should have gotten two shots in the ball in that situation, but the refs completely ignored it and didn't call it. And that was after they called that bogus foul on Kawhi Leonard on the other end. So the Clippers really could have gotten
screwed. Şengün ended up shooting the shots, right? But like Kawhi just jumped in the air and people just fell and they're like, oh, foul.
Yeah, and he missed both free throws.
Could Ty Lue have challenged that?
He could have, I believe. I'm not sure if he used one earlier in the game. But yeah, I mean, that's one of those situations where ball doesn't lie. So listen, nonetheless, the Clippers got the win, and they did it because PG woke up in the second half. I mean, he was god-awful in the first half. He had 2 points on 1 of 6 shooting. He had 19 in the second half on 6 of 9 shooting. Way better in the second half. The Clippers are not a contender without Paul George being the number two to Kawhi's number one. And certainly Kawhi was number one today. He was outstanding when he needed to be. 28-6-7 with 2 steals, 0 turnovers. He was getting to his spot. He had a massive three off an incredible Harden pass. Harden was getting to the basket at will. I was a little concerned because Harden had a good first half, and then he disappeared in the third quarter. But in the fourth quarter, he was getting to the hoop. He was causing problems. He was assisting. He was throwing alley-oops to Plumlee. He was getting the paint. He had that three, that pass of the three to Kawhi. 21-5-7 with a steal and a block. That's a perfect James Harden line. 8 free throw attempts. All in all, the box score tells you that the Clippers are going to win a game. When you have your three guys that are 20-plus, you get 15 from Mann, you get 12 from Powell. You're going to win a lot of games when that happens. And so they won this game because PG woke up in the second half. Because if he doesn't, they lose this game.
And they all played Harden, Kawhi, and Paul George 39 minutes.
Yeah, it's a lot of minutes.
So
they have until Saturday.
Not to be merry, Miss Contrary here, but that's a lot of minutes. And I know Houston is hot. They're a hot team right now in the West, but Boy, oh boy, you want to talk about why guys may be coming out sluggish. They're playing a lot of minutes, and I'm not incredibly concerned about it, but like always, I have my eye on it.
And I would normally be more concerned, but the Clippers were not on a back-to-back, and they don't play again until Saturday. So I think that if there's going to be a game where you were going to play your guys heavy minutes, this was certainly going to be it, because this was a game you absolutely needed to win. You could not lose this game, especially with the schedule coming up, having a back-to-back with Milwaukee on the second end, and having just lost that game you lost to Milwaukee. You had to win this game. So I'm okay with the heavy minutes in this game. But yeah, it's not great that you can't rely on your bench. And this goes back to what we've been saying in the last couple of podcasts, that this bench certainly looks a lot worse than we thought it was during when the huge winning streak for the Clippers. But without Westbrook, at times, I mean, you're relying on other dudes like Amir Coffey, and you're relying on Terrence Mann to have good game. And then off the bench, though, it's Plumlee, Powell, Coffey, and Highland. And if Tice plays, he plays. But yeah, you're relying on dudes to step up. And Norm had a couple of big shots in the fourth quarter, and that's what Norm needs to do. And the Clippers did what they needed to do to win this game. But it didn't come easy, and it never really does nowadays.
And speaking of Russ, how are we feeling now, right now? I mean, I know he's just getting back into the fold, but about Bones, are we? Because I know there was a lot of enthusiasm, like, oh man, Bones will spread the floor. Bones is going to be this guy. But I don't feel that there's that same juice. If I could workshop something, if you'll allow me. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big Bone Thugs and Harmony fan, and I think without Westbrook coming off the bench, the Clippers are a little sluggish, ruggish Bone. Is it in the lineup? Is that something? Is that anything? Regardless, how are we feeling about Bones?
That's a good one. You know what? I need a second to think about that. Let's take a quick break. All right. So Bones Highland, he is someone that has not played in a long time, and he's being thrown into a role where he is the backup point guard. The first couple of games when we saw him, he didn't play at all with James Harden. He got a couple of minutes today with James Harden. Overall, I mean, you look at his line, 6 points, 3 of 6 from the field, didn't hit a three-pointer. He's not doing anything to really overwhelm you. I think what you need from Bones Highland is for him not to hurt you. And that means taking poor shots, playing poor defense, and turning over the basketball. One turnover in 10 minutes is fine. You make 50% of your shots, that's fine. I think with Russell Westbrook out, you just need Bones not to hurt you. And there are going to be a couple of times where you're going to need his energy, and you're going to need him to get a couple of buckets off the bench. And he's going to have those games. There will be a couple of games where he goes 10-plus off the bench and he gets hot from three-point range. But you just need him not to hurt you so that your stars in Kawhi, PG, and Harden, those three dudes, when those guys are on the floor together as the starters, then they can kind of take over. I mean, all along, we're going to need the starters to outscore whatever the bench does. I mean, the bench is probably going to hurt you more games than not because of how thin it is nowadays. So I'm okay with what we've got from Bones. Frankly, I like seeing him get some minutes because I think that the Clippers need to find a couple of young guys that they can use going forward. So I'm okay with what I've seen so far from Bones. He hit a big three against Milwaukee, and he's looked okay. So I'm okay with him. Where are you?
I think the bigger question, and I'm okay with what he's doing, and you're right, you just don't want him to hurt the team. I guess the bigger question is, in the bigger picture, do we need what Russell Westbrook to come back healthy for an elongated playoff run? Or let's say the hand doesn't heal, can we rely on Bones, or is he just not even a playoff guy? This is just a regular season deal. Or so is Westbrook, we have to have him back, basically is what I'm saying. Bones cannot fill that role.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's mostly because of what Russ can do in a game where you're looking sluggish in the playoffs, and Russ can just turn the game on its head.
Sluggish, ruggish Bones.
Yep, exactly. I don't think Bones has the ability to do that quite yet, and so I think Russ can. So I really do think you need Russ back in that sense, but right now during the regular season, I think you're okay with getting him some minutes and just having him not hurt you. Because the starters are good enough. It's just the bench that I worry about from time to time. And listen, Chicago does not have really a bench. Milwaukee has Bobby Portis. Pat Bev is a pain in the ass. But like apart from that, there's not a ton that you're going to see with those two teams that you're going to see a couple of times now. So I think Bones can get the job done. But overall, in the long run, yes, I think you need Russell Westbrook back.
And I completely agree. That's why I brought it up, because I just think that you're seeing the hole that you have without Russ being there, in that energy, in that rebounding prowess, and just kind of getting things moving up and down the court, not having that feet stuck in the mud situation, which we, the Clippers, have had in the last couple of games. I mean, against Milwaukee, good Lord, in that second half, you know, I listened to much of it on the radio, and then I caught the end when I got home on TV, and it was, I didn't even know what I was watching. I was like, what is happening here? Like, it was a completely different team than I recognized, just in their effort, in their pace. It really blew me away. And I don't know if we want to get too deep into that Bucks game, but maybe we should, because that was quite the disaster.
Yeah, and so, listen, credit to the Clippers for making the adjustments they need to in the second half. I mean, Harden and Kawhi did what they needed to do in the first half. PG chipped in, and then in the second half, all three of those dudes were instrumental with a couple of big plays from guys like Norm and T-Man. But they certainly made some adjustments. I mean, Ty Lue talked about post-game today that they want to kind of get into their sets quicker. And he said, if we're going to run a pick and roll, let's get into it with 17 or 18 seconds on the clock and not 11 or 12. Because when we're under 12, they become one of the worst offenses in the league. And, I mean, that is very evident. We can see that. Because then it becomes hard and ISO at the top of the key, and the Clippers scrambling to try and get something up. He said, when we do it 12 seconds or faster, we're top three. 29th in the league, and then third. And that's just getting into your set 5 or 6 seconds quicker. And it makes a lot of sense, because the standing around just results in ISO ball. And the more passes you are able to throw around, and give credit to Carlo and Adam, they're talking about this at halftime, I believe, or right in the third quarter, whenever I caught them, I think it was at some point in the second or third quarter, they were talking about how they need to pass the ball, and they need to pull the Hoosiers and do four passes before they actually make a shot, or take a shot. And that's probably right, man, because this Clippers team, when the ball is moving, and we saw it today with the extra pass to find Norm Powell for three, and the extra pass when Harden gets in the paint to find Kawhi in the corner. When they're passing the basketball, they're a damn good team, because they've got a lot of dudes that can shoot. But when they're going ISO, they become a lot easier to guard. And so if you get into your sets quicker and you start the ball movement, then you're a better basketball team. And so it makes sense. I'm glad Ty Lue recognizes that. And hopefully that is a thing that we notice going forward more.
It's so true. And I mean, but it doesn't only apply to the Clips, right? I mean, it's kind of a way that you want to run an offense. Look at the fourth quarter versus the Timberwolves, when the Clippers eked out a win by one. Why did they win? Because Anthony Edwards has some terrible ISOs.
Yeah.
Karl Anthony Towns, bad ISOs. When they were moving the ball, guess what? It looked like they were going to beat the Clippers. So this is not just the Clippers need to keep moving the ball. This is the way the NBA works now. We talked about this in previous episodes. When the Pelicans swing the ball, when OKC plays five out, and they're just moving the ball. Look at Golden State winning all these titles. Guess what? The ball was flying. That's winning basketball.
Yep. Yeah, and when you have James Harden, and he is as good of a passer as he is, and you've got PG and Kawhi, and those dudes are sharing the basketball, and you got Norm Powell, I'm okay with all four of those guys shooting the ball when they're going to find somebody wide open. Because guess what? When you pass the basketball, you make the defense move. You know what happens when you make the defense move? You make guys tired. You know what happens when you make guys tired? Their legs get tired. You know what happens when the legs get tired? They are struggling more on the offensive end against you. So it helps you on both ends. The more you move the basketball, the more a team has to defend, and maybe the less they'll have in their legs on the offensive end. So it really is simple. The Clippers are a team that should be moving the ball quickly and getting it in around the horn, getting into the paint and kicking it out and spraying it around. Like, the formula's there, Matt. It really is.
It is. And it's just going to take, well, effort, discipline and drive, killer instinct. And we always talk about this. We always talk about that there needs to be talent, execution, and luck. Those are the three things. So far, and you have to knock on everything, knock on all the woods you can. Luck has so far been in the Clippers' favor as far as health is concerned. There have been some blips. We know Zio had headaches tonight. Talent, you cannot argue that. You can't. Execution, now we need to move into that phase where we're executing every night, every quarter, every game.
And I think that gets to what we talked about at the start of this podcast, that the frustration level is high because the Clippers have the talent. And so I don't enjoy when the Clippers make things a lot harder in games without Giannis or in games today against a Houston team on the second game of back-to-back. Like, the formula's there. The talent is there. They are capable of playing at the level they played in the second half. Why is that not occurring in every single quarter? They have this give-no-quarter motto, and they're giving a lot of quarters this year. It just seems like there's just a lack of urgency, and that was the part about the Clippers that drove me nuts the last several years, that it really felt like they were entitled, that they thought that she should be easily getting a top four seed, and they'll figure it out in the postseason. And it feels like they completely avoided that in the first half of the year, where they came out strong, they gave a crap, everybody was playing through injuries, and working their asses off, and they're playing great basketball. And now, all of a sudden, we're seeing them go on that roller coaster, going up and down, and not stick to what was there in the first half. And I don't know what the reason for it is, whether it's health, guys are getting a little bit tired, but the formula is there, and the Clippers have shown they're capable of doing it. They've shown they care about the regular season. Just continue to do it. And listen, you continue to do it, you very well could work up your way to the 2 or 3 seed. It's possible. It's unlikely, but it's possible.
Yeah, and unless the Normandy and Adams Coin Laundry is a new sponsor of the Clippers, they should not be giving up this many quarters because they have the talent to do it, just like you said, and they just have to get back to paying attention and really just starting the game. Because even Kawhi said in his post-game interview, we came out slow and then we found our rhythm. Doris Burke said, it doesn't seem like Paul George is in rhythm right now. They're coming out of rhythm and finding the rhythm by the end of the second quarter into the third. No, we need to come out. Clippers need to come out with that rhythm. Can I ask you a quick broadcasting question? Just something I noticed at the end of the game.
Yes.
Because you are an ace broadcaster, the UC Irvine Anteaters.
Thank you.
One of my favorite women's college basketball teams. In fact, not my favorite, since you are the ace announcer of them.
Thank you.
But I noticed towards the end of the game, there was less than a minute left, and there was something, whatever foul language, whatever may have been happening in the background. And usually that cuts the entire broadcast out. But I noticed that the background got cut out, but you could still hear Mark Jones and Doris. Is that new technology? Do we know anything about that?
They must have cut out the crowd mic. Because
I love that.
Yeah, they have a crowd mic. If you're listening to a baseball broadcast, there's a microphone that sits behind home plate, and that's why you're able to hear the ball hit the mitt on like a radio broadcast or even a TV broadcast. You're able to hear it because there is that microphone. Like you know how when Joe Girardi last year got tossed, you were able to pick up some of the audio from the TV broadcast. It's because of that, and so they have that mic behind home plate, and they've got a mic that's on the court as well, and so they must have just completely gotten rid of that. The crowd mic, whatever it was, and that's why you're able to still hear Doris and still able to hear Mark Jones.
I thought that was really cool, just yeah. Because I hate when they cut the entire broadcast and just silent for 3 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you mean. And by the way, you brought it up, so I guess I'll do a quick little plug. Filling in on the men's side, because Trent Rush, who does the UC Irvine men's team, he's off to Arizona. He's currently there doing some Angel stuff. So, for anybody that's listening, tune in AM 830 in the LA area. It's the Angels Radio Network. I will be on the airwaves tomorrow night. If you're listening to this podcast, it's probably going to be tonight, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. UC Irvine will take on Cal Poly, so I'll be on the air there, also be on ESPN+. And then on Saturday night, I will also be on AM 830 as UC Irvine takes on Cal State Fullerton. I'll be doing a double dip. I got the women's game on ESPN+ at 2 p.m., and then hopping in the car and heading to Cal State Fullerton to do that game at 7 o'clock. So a quick little plug on my end there. What else you want to hit on? I think I've hit on everything I want to hit on. Anything else you want to touch on?
I've got nothing else, actually. I'm just happy that the Clippers were able to pull out this win. We are going to need to really focus as fans on these next set of games, as we were talking about, because it's going to be really important. The Clippers seem to be locking themselves into this fourth spot, but regardless of seeding, it's going to be about momentum, and it's going to be about what we just talked about, coming out in the first quarter. But how about coming out in the first round of the playoffs with rhythm? Clippers really need to start sort of gelling, tightening it up. I know it's going to be hard with Russ out until perhaps the first round of the playoffs. But boy, it's time to stop this roller coaster ride. Was that a Sugar Ray song? Anyway, it's time to stop this roller coaster ride. We have 15 minutes of fame here. And I just want to fly.
Any more references there, or you think you hit your max?
I don't know that I can think of any more without Googling it. So that off the top of my head, that's all I can think of.
Well done.
I think.
Well done. Two quick notes that I want to mention as I look back at my notes from the last two games. The free throw shooting against the Bucks was inexcusable. Absolutely inexcusable. For PG and Harden to be as poor as they were from the free throw line, just unacceptable. And if I was Paul George, I would not have taken that technical free throw for the defensive 3 seconds that was called in a close game when you were, I believe, had missed three free throws already during that game. I really wish Kawhi would have taken that free throw. And I don't know if that would have changed the game because Milwaukee had all the momentum on their side. But missing a free throw like that certainly doesn't help. So yeah, free throw shooting inexcusable there. Second thing I want to mention was that it was a little concerning, and I don't know if this had to do with Zoo's health, but it was really concerning that the Clippers went small for as long as they did. And you and I have talked about this, and you know that's one of my major pet peeves. When the Clippers are winning games, do not go small. You need a center in there to get rebounds and limit teams to one possession. And also, if their opposing center is in, and in this case, Bobby Portis and Brook Lopez both were, you need to have a center in there to guard down low. And the Clippers did not do that. And I think that was the reason why they lost. And was it because Zoo's health, or was it because the Clippers just wanted to have better offense on the floor and be able to have that switchability, which is what Ty Lue said after the game? If that was the case, I think it was a really poor decision. Switchability is not as important as having a center on the floor to limit teams to one possession, especially when it's a center as good as Zoo. So those are my 2 points that I wanted to bring up.
So we'll go from the last to the first. We need our Zoo binoculars on because we need to see just what's going on with Zoo, and if he's actually hurt, if he's going to play up to, like we said before, that level he was playing at the beginning of the season, because he's so gosh darn important to the team, especially come playoff time. And then we'll jump to the free throws. I tweeted this out, but I looked at my fantasy team in which on which I have Paul George and Rudy Gobert, and on Tuesday, when the Clippers were, or on Monday, excuse me, when they were playing, who were they playing? The Bucks, excuse me. So Paul George is 3 of 7 and Rudy Gobert is 7 of 7. And I said, oh, well, look, ESPN screwed this up. They just mixed those two up. No, Paul George could not hit a free throw to save his life. And it really was, I mean, we talked about this earlier. And we can just bring this up real quick. The excuses and like the aberrations, right? Oh, the Clippers lost to the Lakers because LeBron was on one. It's a back-to-back against the Bucks, so they're gonna lose. At a certain point, the excuses, you can't make excuses. You just have to win those games. Then that's what a championship team does. So excuses have to stop, and the Clippers just need to start taking care of business.
Yep, and it starts on Saturday. Back to back, obviously, with Chicago and then Milwaukee. We'll be back post game after that Milwaukee game to discuss the back to back. And hopefully, the Clippers went 2-0 in that home back to back because it's two games that they should win. It's going to be a lot harder, though, against Giannis, who probably will be back in that lineup for that game on Sunday. Remember, you can always leave us a review. Give us a 5-star rating. It helps this podcast as we continue to grow. Give us a few retweets, a like, anything you can on X. Share it with your friends. Share it with your family as we continue to keep growing this podcast. You can follow me on Twitter, /X, at BD Marcus. You can follow Matt at MattMattAward. So until next time, he's Matt, I'm Brandon, and go Clips.
Go Clips.